This is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti, here on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, simulcast on kpw.org. All right, this is one of my first interviews back in the 90s, early 90s, with Bill Condy, who was trying to get hemp lumber products going. That's how long ago. Believe it or not, pot used to be illegal not too long ago. And this is how far ahead of his time he was. He was trying to make building products way back in the 90s out of hemp. And you'll hear a mistake that I make. I talk about a binder. I thought he was going to make the binder out of hemp, which probably can be done. But what he's talking about is making particle board or oriented stranded board that you see slapped on top of 2x4s all over the place when they make houses out of wood, entirely out of wood. You could be making them out of hemp, and you need a binder to make oriented stranded board out of hemp. You could probably make structural lumber too out of hemp. It is so strong if they had the correct binder. So that's what he's talking about. We still don't have oriented stranded board made out of hemp. I've written letters to some very large corporations, and they said they're not interested, even if we got government funding to help them switch over to hemp. So that's the state we're in. After 30 years, we still do not have building materials out of hemp. So that's what this show is about. Coming up, Bill Condy on Talk is Cheap on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, simulcast on kpw.org. Tell your friends, support independent media. Thanks for listening.
Done some preliminary investigation on binder research, and there has been a very good potential shown in our research that says that we can quite possibly not only use the fiber for manufacturing of building materials, but we might be able to extract a binder from the component parts of the plant itself.
And how strong are these building materials?
Well, our prototypes that we have now that we've done our original research on were created up at Washington State University at their Wood Engineering Laboratory. And the strength tests, which are your basic tests, are modulus of rupture, modulus of elasticity, and internal bond. And all three of the major strength factors that we've tested 2 to 3 times stronger than world-class standards require.
Okay.
Of Douglas fir.
So why do you think hemp is illegal?
Well, I believe it's illegal because of its use as a fiber. And like I was saying, back up a little bit for you and say that, you know, we got to take in a couple of different things. First of all, we'll look at the prohibition of alcohol real briefly. Women's temperance, although they did great work, I don't think that they were the real reason that we had alcohol prohibition. I believe that alcohol prohibition was in order to get gasoline on the market to fill the gas tanks of all those new little Ford automobiles that were around that a lot of people were utilizing alcohol.
Cars used to run on alcohol.
Yeah. They were originally designed to run on alcohol. There wasn't gas stations all over the place. People had to make their own fuel.
So yeah, Ford tested their motors on farm equipment.
Yeah.
Which used alcohol, because it was right there on the farm.
Right. Yeah. People made their own fuel.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole group of people involved in this, and I don't want to take up too much time talking about DuPont and Mellon and all the other people that were in power at that time and in the right position to pull this off. But truth of the matter is, hemp had been the number one cash crop in the United States. There was actually a couple of states that you could be imprisoned if you refused to grow hemp when the government ordered you to grow hemp, because they needed it for the war efforts. All their cordage and all their sails and stuff of their ships were all made out of hemp. That being here and there, but like I was saying with the gasoline, they went out and prohibition of alcohol gave them the excuse to go out and destroy all the stills. And during the period of prohibition of alcohol, gas stations were set up all over the country. And then as soon as they got all the gas stations set up and they got everybody burning gasoline in their cars and they destroyed all the stills that were out there, then they repealed prohibition of alcohol. Which shows you that it really wasn't about a moral issue at all. It was economics, man. It was gasoline is what it was. And the government having this incredible law enforcement armed force arm of the government in place, you know, they hate to take apart any armed forces that they have. They always like to keep those type of guys hanging around. So they had this incredible armed force that they'd created to deal with the prohibition of alcohol. And after they repealed prohibition, they had no place for these people to go. So they had to create the next demon. And seeing how there was a byproduct from gasoline called nylon, they needed to take, in order to bring nylon onto the market, at that point in time, the main thing that they had, the main usage, potential usage for nylon was cordage. And the number one fiber for cordage was hemp. So they went about demonizing hemp. They put a new name on it. They called it marijuana. And they went after it just like they went after alcohol for some sort of moralistic reason. They went after hemp as on a moralistic campaign. And they kept that whole government bureaucracy with all those policemen all still kept their jobs, and they got to go after the next group of bad guys. And mm-hmm. So.
And how can hemp save the forest?
How can hemp save the forest? Well, the issue is really about fiber. It's really, you know, they're cutting down trees for fiber. I mean, if you look at what we utilize in our life today, I can't tell you that it was an exact scientific study, but my common sense tells me as I look around me and I look at different things that are manufactured for us, I see 4 basic raw material groups that are accountable for probably 95% of the bulk of raw material that we utilize in our manufacturing base. And those 4 groups are metals, petrochemicals, silicas, and fiber. Fiber is the largest by a long shot. It is the amount of volume of fiber that's utilized on an annual basis on the planet is more than the combination of all petrochemicals and all metals combined. So where do we get our fiber from? We've been getting it from trees as the main source of our fiber. We do have cotton, we got flax, we got a lot of other fiber plants that we do utilize. But the massive amount of fiber that we utilize, you know, is like for building materials and things of that nature, you know, I mean, like cotton, we make clothes out of cotton, you know. So, I mean, if you want to know where the most amount of fiber is used, well, you know, go in your closet and weigh your clothes and then come out and weigh your house.
But you were saying they make houses out of ground up trees is what,
well, that's
their composite
the,
trees.
The new technology that's coming on right now, and the largest growing segment of the entire timber industry, is composites. All truss joists, all these people, all the MDF, medium density fiber board, particle board, all the paneling, all the different things, you know, and they're making, you know, joists and all sorts. I mean, they're just making incredible stuff. You can buy, there are some entire homes that are built now without one piece of sawn lumber.
Yeah, stress skin. And all that can be done with hemp, but hemp grows a lot faster than trees.
Yeah, well, when it comes to production, if you take trees in the Pacific Northwest here in a temperate climate, there are other places which will produce trees faster than the Pacific Northwest. You can go down into the tropics and they grow quite a bit faster down there. But we're talking about like right here in this temperate region of the planet, we have a real problem with cutting down all the trees. If you take trees on a 60-year cycle in the Pacific Northwest, in other words, plant some trees out there on some acreage, at the end of 60 years, cut them down, dry them out, weigh them, take the weight, divide it by 60, and you'll find that you produce about 2,000 or less pounds of dry fiber per acre per year on a 60-year cycle. If you go out and plant hemp, and you plant 300 to 400 seeds to a square yard, and then you take it and cut it down at the end of 120 days, you've got a minimum. And the smallest crops that we've seen were, you know, like over in France, we went and viewed their crops last year. Of course, you know, they grow sunflowers over there that are only 3 feet tall. So their hemp crop, they get about 6 ton to an acre over there.
How much is that in 60 years then? Yeah. So that's...
I mean, it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. I don't know. I'd have to work
my calculator. Oh, in 120 days, yeah.
In 120 days, I'm telling you that, like, hemp right now, we could almost guarantee you within no time at all, just within a couple of seasons, that you're going to be getting 10 ton to an acre, 20,000 pounds, okay, as compared to 2,000.
2,000 pounds in 60 years.
You know, you get 2,000 pounds per year. At the end of 60 years, you got 120,000 pounds coming off of an acre, okay? If you take hemp, though, in 120 days, you can get 20,000 pounds. And we believe that if the plant were legal and we were allowed to work with it, look what they've done to corn since the turn of the century. What was the yield of corn back in the 1800s? And look at the yield of corn today. You know, I'm not suggesting that we do a lot of heavy chemical agriculture, which, by the way, hemp can be grown with no pesticides and no herbicides. So the impact on the ground, and as far as it being environmentally friendly and friendly to the farmers and inexpensive, it's a tremendous, tremendous...
It can be grown anywhere in the world.
Just about, except for the polar regions, you know. And if you want to put up... I'm sure there's people, you know, up in Alaska and different places growing it too.
So, what is being done to legalize hemp?
Well, the truth of the matter is that hemp, the industrial fiber, is not illegal. All the laws that are written have exemptions for industrial hemp fiber. The truth of the matter is many countries in the world have recognized this now. And without going into the history of the politics of how the other countries were forced into eradicating hemp by the United States government starting in the 60s through an international treaty, I can tell you that the treaty itself, which is international law, exempts the cultivation of cannabis sativa when it is for industrial fiber. England in 1991.
Well, so if I can prove an industrial use, I can grow hemp.
Not in this country.
Oh, not in this country.
The DEA refuses to acknowledge that there's a difference. And as long as it's got that funny shaped leaf on it, they will not make any distinction between industrial hemp and the smoking variety of marijuana. But starting in 91, England made the distinction and went ahead. and started cultivating cannabis.
Well, China's already making clothes out of hemp, aren't they?
So China's been growing hemp for thousands of years. They've never stopped.
That's how valuable it is.
The word canvas comes from the word cannabis.
The British conquered the world because their sails were made out of hemp.
Yeah, but their sails were made for them by the Russians.
Who grew hemp.
Who grew a lot of hemp. Uh-huh. And the reason, it's getting a little bit of a stretch now, maybe, but that Napoleon invaded Russia behind hemp.
I'm looking over a four-leaf clover that I overlooked before. One is for sunshine, the other for rain.
Also brought to you by Billy Bob Clinton's Missiles R Us. Hi, I'm Billy Bob Clinton, the largest dealer of missiles in the world. I've sold more missiles than anybody. I'll eat a bug to sell you a missile. I got a herd of missiles. I'm practically giving them away. They're stacked up here like cordwood. No cash. We have instant credit. We'll take most any type of collateral. We take oil, minerals, cheap labor, just about anything. This week's special, F-15 fighters, only 5 left, so get here fast. Take the Pennsylvania Avenue past Silo 16 till you see the crater in the road. Turn right and you're at Billy Bob Clinton's Missiles R Us. Come near closing time wearing a thong and I'll show you a wrinkled missile.
Brought to you by Gluteus Maximus Excon Cranium. Do you still think women and people of color are inferior? Do you think corporations care about people and the environment? Do you think George Bush doesn't know the lyrics to the Horse Vessel song? You may be suffering from terminal ignorance. Made from 100% Amanita mushrooms, Gluteus Maximus Excon Cranium actually removes the brain plaque associated with terminal ignorance. Pick up some today before it's too late. Side effects are compassion, forgiveness, and hysterical laughter. Brought to you by Polythene Peninsula. Don't wait to get in on the seafloor of this earth-shattering real estate opportunity. Made from 100% post-consumer plastic, these houses and the entire development are built to last for millennium. We have a few units in the low 250s still left. Act now and we guarantee, while they last, fresh packaged fish on your doorstep twice daily. Polythene Peninsula, spreading the future across the globe. Brought to you by Silt River Tree Museum and Casino. Built on the site where an actual ancient rainforest once stood, see a full-scale replica of a Douglas fir tree. See pictures of trees larger in diameter than a man is tall. Trout and salmon that once choked the rivers of the Northwest will sing to you in our chamber of taxidermy. Hear the disaffected sounds of Feller Buncher and his bunch of fellers, an all-ex-logger band, in our simulated wood amphitheater. Take the Oregon Desert Highway to the clear-cut road exit, turn right at the stump in the road, and you're at Silt River Tree Museum and Casino. Free parking, kids a buck and a half, closed during summer months due to melting asphalt, giant locusts, and methyl ethyl hydroxy colchicine slag emissions.
And now, a message from your Department of Health.
Hello, my name is Safety Sam, and I'm here to spread the word about a health problem of great importance to us all. Did you know that VD, venereal disease, has reached epidemic proportions in our city? Well, you should know the facts about this public menace in order to protect yourself and those you love. Venereal diseases, syphilis and gonorrhea, are diseases transmitted only through intimate physical contact. They are both extremely dangerous, and left untreated, result in blindness, heart trouble, insanity, and death. Here are some of the early warning signs to watch out for. If you are a man and experience a burning sensation or itching when you urinate, you may have gonorrhea. If you are a man or a woman and discover a chancre on your privates, you may have syphilis. If spotted in time, a doctor can cure you of a venereal disease infection. But once cured, you have no insurance against recontamination. For more information, write or call the Department of Health office in your community. Remember, the war against venereal disease is your war. Therefore, observe the golden rule of good health. A bird in the hand is better than one in the bush. Thank you.
Acceptance Corporation.
Radiation. Yes, indeed. You hear the most outrageous lies about it. Half-baked Gogglebox do-gooder telling everybody it's bad for you. Pernicious nonsense. Everybody could stand 100 chest x-rays a year. They ought to have to. When they canceled the project, it almost did me in. One day my mind was a little burst. The next day, nothing. Show them. I had a lobotomy in the end.
Lobotomy? Isn't that for loonies?
Not at all. A friend of mine had one. Designer of the neutron bomb. You ever hear of the neutron bomb? Destroys people. Leaves buildings standing. Fits in a suitcase. So small, no one knows it's there till blam! Eyes melt, skin explodes, everybody dead. So immoral working on a thing can drive you mad. That's what happened to this friend of mine. So he had a lobotomy. Now he's well again.
What kind of car does your friend drive?
Chevy Malibu.
This is really a nice old car. Let me drive.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know. I mean, don't you feel funny?
Why should I feel funny? The two hemispheres are fundamentally at odds. Hemisphere. You know, it's strange. I do.
Thank you.
Do you think it's too late for us to romantically involve? Wait, stick with me. I'll make you a repo wife.
Each week, we open with an authentic act of political terrorism. Each week, we open with an authentic act of political terrorism. Each week, we open with an authentic act of political terrorism.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, Mr. Beale, and I won't have it! Is that clear? You think you merely stopped a business deal? That is not the case. The Arabs have taken billions of dollars out of this country, and now they must put it back. It is ebb and flow, tidal gravity. It is ecological balance. You are an old man who thinks in terms of nations and peoples. There are no nations. There are no peoples. There are no Russians. There are no Arabs. There are no third worlds. There is no West. There is only one holistic system of systems. One vast and immane, interwoven, interacting, multivariate, multinational dominion of dollars. Petrodollars, electrodollars, multidollars, Reichmarks, rims, rubles, pounds, and shekels. It is the international system of currency which determines the totality of life on this planet. That is the natural order of things today. That is the atomic and subatomic and galactic structure of things today. And you have meddled with the primal forces of nature. And you will atone.
Am I getting through to you, Mr. Beale?
You get up on your little 21-inch screen and howl about America and democracy. There is no America. There is no democracy. There is only IBM and ITT and AT&T and DuPont, Dow, Union Carbide, and Exxon. Those are the nations of the world today. What do you think the Russians talk about in their councils of state? Karl Marx? They get out their linear programming charts, statistical decision theories, min-max solutions, and compute the price-cost probabilities of their transactions and investments, just like we do. We no longer live in a world of nations and ideologies, Mr. Beale. The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. It has been since man crawled out of the slime. And our children will live, Mr. Beale, to see that perfect world in which there's no war or famine, oppression or brutality. One vast and ecumenical holding company for whom all men will work to serve a common profit, in which all men will hold a share of stock, all necessities provided, all anxieties tranquilized, all boredom amused. And I have chosen you, Mr. Beale, to preach this evangel.
Why me?
Because you're on television, dummy. 60 million people watch you every night of the week, Monday through Friday.
I have seen the face of God.
You just might be right, Mr. Beale.
Thank you. All right, killradio.org. This is the foreword from Challenging Corporate Rule by Robert Benson of the National Lawyers Guild. This is a manual for citizen action to challenge corporate power. As you read it, know that you are not alone. You're invited to become part of a large movement of citizens who have realized at the same historical moment that we must reassert control over corporations, or else all is lost. Our independence, our democracy. I was among the speakers when a group of us presented to the Attorney General of California our citizens' petition to revoke the charter of the Union Oil Company of California at the Reagan Building in Los Angeles in September of 1998. Thinking of other citizens who may want to close miscreant corporations in other states, I said then that our purposes are even larger than they seem. We are not seeking just the closure and reorganization of one oil company, though we need that. We are taking an important, open, and public first step together as citizens and citizen organizations of the United States to end the domination of our economics, our culture, our environment, our politics, our government, and our national life by large and irresponsible national and transnational corporations. We're not just focusing here on one company's violations of laws to protect American citizens. We are saying that we, the people of the United States, acting in our several states, chartered the U.S.-based transnational corporations that now range across the world. Unocal was chartered in California in 1890, and we assert our moral responsibility for, and therefore our democratic control over, offenses against people which our corporations commit or in which they become complicit anywhere and everywhere in the world. We know that to take this position is politically incorrect, at least in customary major party politics. It's a no-no to admit, much less to assert, that we as citizens are incriminated by what our corporations do abroad. Democracy is not supposed to be to blame, but Americans are to blame, and democracy is to blame, and we here and now accept responsibility and start the long way back until the corporations we create are once again subordinate in every way to the will of the people. Our forebears knew what they were doing about corporations. For 100 years, our state legislators created corporations as agents of the democratic will, set the limits on what they could do, and closed them if they exceeded the authority the people gave them. 112 years ago, in 1886, the Supreme Court began the long process, which climaxed in the Bellotti case in the 1970s, of declaring, in effect, in defense of common sense and democracy, that corporations are people, and giving them the constitutional rights of people, including free speech. Since 1886, waves of corporate lawyers who put property over democracy have developed new theories of the corporation to defy democracy. The corporation, they pronounce, is only a private business association, a nexus of contracts that the people have nothing to do with, democracy has nothing to do with. By giving our rights to what should have remained our subordinate creations, the judges of the Supreme Court across time have stolen our country from us. In consequence, the corporations are super citizens, and we are their sub-citizens. The corporations are super persons, and we are their super sub-persons. And the corporations we create as servants of our public interest have broken free of our democratic control and metamorphosed into the international creatures of greed and rapacity that now dominate the world. By this petition and our action together for it, we are telling you that we the people have everything to do with you, and that we are launching a broad citizens movement to make sure that you know it and remember it. We the people have the right to control the shape and terms of our economic life as well as our political life. What, God help us, we should have learned by now from the long history of civilization is that if the people don't control economic life, that the inevitably gathering economic oligarchy, the plutocracy, will strangle democracy. That is what has been happening again in the United States since the defeat of the American populist at the end of the last century. For the past 15 or 20 years now, the divine right of kings has been replaced by the divine right of CEOs and the controlling owners behind them. We are ruled now by a form of government in which hierarchical and authoritarian corporations control the government for their own profit and the power against the people's interests. President Franklin Roosevelt said in 1938, quote, "The liberty of a democracy is not safe if the people tolerate the growth of private power to a point where it becomes stronger than their democratic state itself." That in its essence is fascism. Look at us 4 decades later. Regulation of the large corporations has been abandoned by government. Antitrust laws are mounted in the trophy cases of politicians. In 1997, we had 156 corporate mergers, each worth more than $1 billion. Big business fires workers for trying to form unions and gets away with it year after year. The corporate share of taxes has dropped in the last 50 years from 33% to 15%, while the people's share of taxes has gone from 44% to 73%. 1% of the people among us own 40% of the national wealth. The savings and loan rake-off cost taxpayers $500 billion. The rate of child poverty among us is 4 times the rate in Western Europe. 40 million of us have no health insurance. The cigarette corporations go on killing for profit. Who gives a damn? Sweatshops turn to the garment industry. Sweatshops return to the garment industry. Who gives a damn? Huge conglomerates, corporations control our newspapers and the broadcasts on our own public airways. Who gives a damn? Our jobs are exported to the low-wage areas of the world with no protections for the workers or the environment abroad. Corporations, not governments, are 51 of the 100 largest economies in the world. 4 decades after that warning from Roosevelt, our elections are bought, and we all know it. The government is no longer our government. It's these huge corporations' government. It's these huge corporations' government, and we all know it. As outgoing Senate Democratic Majority Leader George Mitchell of Maine said, "The system stinks. The system is money." We speak out and act together now to hold the Union Oil Company of California accountable to the people. Yes, but also to say with President Roosevelt that the huge national and transnational corporations have become more powerful than the democratic state itself. In this book you have in your hands, the beginning of a new people's movement to take back our government from the corporations that have seized it and now abuse and misuse our democratic power against democracy around the world. So that's the beginning of Robert Benson's book, Challenging Corporate Rule, by Robert Benson of the National Lawyers Guild. And here is Robert Benson last week.
"To move towards social and economic justice. We're exceptionally..."
Thanks for listening. Tell your friends.
"Plaintiff in the Nike versus Caskey. It went to the U.S. Supreme Court on April 23rd, and Mark Caskey was invited to appear on many well-known programs. Some of you know, I suppose some were Fox News. He said no. He also said no to CNN Newsnight. He did not give an..."
Thank you. Ha ha ha!